All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast and the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. I'm Doug Norrie, the owner-operator of DFSR.com. If you're interested in FanDuel or DraftKings projections, head on over to DFSR.com. Got everything covered for you there. NFL season coming up. Baseball season in full swing, as they say. Tons of stuff happening, so head on over to DFSR.com. No Adam Armbrecht today for a Friday podcast. My man's been holding it down through the draft, Locked On Now videos, covering just about everything. We've had been doing interviews with people that are coming up next week about some of the draft guys that Nets got in the draft. So he's been crushing it. Much deserved Friday off. Hopefully get him a couple of more days off. The guy deserves it. So just going to be by my lonesome on this one. Bunch of stuff to talk about, though. Sort of some fallout here from the Dinwiddie trade. Sign-in trade. Get into that. I want to get into a little bit about free agency just as a whole, how things turned out for the other teams in the East. As of right now, according to our good friends over at Bet Online, Nets and Lakers are both 300, plus 300, to win the championship next year. They're basically tied as prohibitive favorites. Next closest team is the Bucks at plus 900. So clearly Vegas, and specifically here Bet Online, which was a sharp book, is saying the Nets are, you know, came no matter. It was kind of probably not going to matter really what happened with free agency for them. I think the Lakers, for all their moves, helped their chances a lot. Nets were always going to come out of this. But I kind of wanted to take a look at how the rest of these teams in the East, sort of what happened for them in free agency, what can be expected. Some teams didn't move much. Some kind of took a step backwards. A few took a couple steps forward. Want to break all that down as it compares to how the Nets are looking going into the regular season next year. But did want to talk briefly about this the Spencer Dinwiddie sign-in trade. We talked at length about it yesterday. There was much consternation among Nets faithful after reading the deal that had it ended up being a five-team trade altogether. It involved the Wizards, the Lakers were in there, obviously the Nets, the Spurs made an appearance for some salary dump, and Pacers got in on that as well. So five teams overall, varying levels of what each team got, and I'm not going to read the entire trade because it's long and it's winding, and Fred Katz did an awesome job of recapping it all for The Athletic. So you should definitely go check it out because it actually gives a little more insight into what the wheelings and dealings were behind the scenes when it came to Dinwiddie and when it came to some of these other parts. He did an awesome article for The Athletic. It's definitely worth checking out if you want to see sort of how this thing shook out, because Nets fans definitely came out of that and said, oh, you know, the Nets have all the leverage here. The Wizards really want them. They're overextended. They need the Nets to do the sign-in trade because it's going to take them so far over the cap. Nets can be able to do that, so the Nets can kind of hold them over the barrel and get a lot out of it. But with the Cats reporting, okay, so two things happened with this Cats reporting. One was that the Nets didn't just go in there and say, give us whatever. I think that there was a feeling among Nets fans that were like, oh, the Nets just said, oh, give us whatever. Oh, two second-round picks? Well, one's a second-round pick and one's a swap. So, and they did end up getting an international player in there as well, and they got an $11.5 million trade exception. So not nothing. Not, you know, it wasn't a haul by any means. And again, it had Nets fans specifically on Twitter kind of throwing their hands up being like, what happened here? You know, we got ripped off. This is Dinwiddie. It's a sign and trade. How did all this happen? How did they come back with, you know, quote unquote, so little? And what Katz kind of throws out there is that the Nets, okay, so they had two operating sort of philosophies that they were working under this trade. They did not want to take back a lot of money because they're already well into the luxury tax. They are not pinching pennies by any means. They've spent a ton, nearly historic numbers here for what they're going to end up spending. And in this part of it, there was a feeling among them that they just didn't want to bring back anything of money. Now, that's going to include guys like Kuzma. Kuzma makes money. It's going to include guys like Montrezl Harrell. You know, these guys have bigger contracts. Nets were not interested in taking those contracts back. So right there, those guys are off the table. We do not want those guys. Those guys aren't coming. Simply don't want the money coming back. Okay. So the next group was rookie scale sort of contracts that the Nets could probably that would be easier to swallow on just the overall money piece. They started with Rui Hachimura. That was a clear no. They started Denny Avia. That was another no from the Wizards, saying that just the Wizards weren't going to give up those kind of assets just to be able to bring Dinwiddie in. They wanted him, clearly, but there was a stopping point for them where it just wasn't going to happen in terms of just sending out their young players. You know, Hachimura started a bunch for them last year, looked decent at times. The defense is a little rough. And then Denny was their first-round draft pick last year. They're not going to just cut bait on him to bring in Dinwiddie. That's sort of not the point of what they're trying to build. So they said no to that stuff, too. The other problem, according to Katz, is that they, because of all the deals that they've done in the past, they did not have a first-round draft pick to even deal until 2028. So there was no first-round pick that they could have even included that would have that they can convey to the Nets in a deal. So there just wasn't one available. They can't go get one from another team. They can't create a first-round draft pick out of thin air. So where does that leave you if you're the Nets in this deal, right? Like, what is there really to ask for at this point? You don't want to take the money. Okay, they're not going to give up the young players. They don't have any first-round picks. So what's left? What's left is second-round picks, a pick swap. Like I said, I think an international player got conveyed through the Spurs part of the deal to them. And then you get the trade exception, which is $11.5 million, not nothing, but something that will be able to fit into, hopefully, during the season, if they're going to go that route at the trade deadline. If there's a team that wants to offload money at that point, there's maybe fitting a guy or maybe even two, probably not, into that trade exception. So I think that's where, if you read this report, it kind of was like what Adam and I were saying without having the inside knowledge of what was actually being offered back and forth was, it's easy to look at that package that the Nets got back and say, what the hell happened here? Like, this is Dinwiddie. This guy's a, you know, borderline star. He's a guy that the Wizards want to pay huge money to. They want him. They need him. They're going to unload the Brinks truck here for the Nets. But when it gets down to it, every team has their stopping points or breaking points about what they're just simply not going to do. And that was kind of what I suspected had happened with this deal. It wasn't for lack of asking. It was just for, you can ask for whatever you want. No one's obligated to say that they're going to do it. And then at that point, what are you going to do if you're the Nets? You have to make deals with these teams in the future. Are you going to stop the whole thing? Maybe stop doing what they consider to be doing right by Spencer Dinwiddie as well, which I think probably played a part in it also, is on an organizational level, is that part where, hey, we're doing right by our guys, even if our guys are going to other teams. They said that with D'Angelo Russell on the sign and trade out the door with the Warriors. They've been really good about how they treat players, especially as they're leaving. And so I think that factors into it as well, as saying, what are we going to do? We're going to hold the whole deal up. He's not going to go to the Wizards because we're going to stand firm about getting back, you know, this young player, because the Wizards are just going to say no, and now you're sort of stuck. And so, and then Dinwiddie has to go find another suitor, or the contract number gets lower and then everyone's unhappy. Not to say you have to cave from that point of view, but I think there was just enough balls in the air here, enough moving parts that when you take a step back and sort of hear about what happened, it makes a little bit more sense about why that package looks so small. So in the end, I'm still not concerned with it. I think the Nets did and held out for what was going to be available to them. At some point, the Wizards are going to say no also. And then, like I said, then you're stuck and then no one's getting, you're all just kind of doing the Spider-Man point at each other, little move, little the meme about, you know, who's going to move first. And I think that's just how these deals end up going. So it was good to get some inside knowledge of that. Good to know that the Nets were asking. You know, I'm not surprised the Wizards said no to some of those younger players. I'm sure they would have been happy to ship out some of the guys they got in the Westbrook deal. Just that wasn't going to work on the Nets side of it. And so that is ends up where you have it. And all in all, that's what they get back for the Dinwiddie trade. And it just makes a little bit more sense to me now, seeing it reported this way and just seeing it kind of on paper. All right, I wanted to take a look at what some of these other Eastern Conference teams ended up doing or not doing in free agency and how it sort of lines up with where the Nets stand going into this season. So I think from a free agency level, I think the Nets had a very good, between the draft and free agency, I think this is about as good as you could expect them to have done. Knowing that they were going to be capped a little bit on the money that they were going to be able to spend, knowing that they had draft picks that were not super high lottery, or they weren't even lottery picks, but you know they had enough of them that they're going to be able to add some parts. I think knowing those two things going in, looking to create more, build out more of a roster around the three superstars, I think you have to be feel really, really happy about where the Nets landed here. We've talked about this the entire week. We feel really good about the draft. We felt great about the draft. Great about the Patty Mills signing. James Johnson's kind of wait and see. Awesome to bring Blake back. You got to feel pretty good about where the Nets stand. Maybe a small move or two to be made here over the next couple days. I don't think too much else happens as they round out the roster. Where you have to feel even better is looking at the Eastern Conference and what the Nets are going to have to deal with during the regular season here in terms of how these teams improved or didn't. So I wanted to run down a few of the teams, where they sort of stand, what happened with them. Not going to do deep dives in each one of these, but some teams had more happen than others. There were some improvements, some, like I said, some steps back. But I think it's good to sort of take a bird's eye view and say, okay, heading into next season, as it stands now, with free agency, not over, but most of the big names are pretty much cleared away. We're still waiting to see, you know, Dennis Schroeder is going to get signed somewhere. Who knows? His market absolutely tanked around him. But regardless, most of the heavy hitters have been cleared away, and we kind of know how these teams are shaping up. Just going to roll through the top of the Eastern Conference here, give you an idea of what these teams did or didn't do, and we'll just quickly grade out, you know, where we stand, how we feel about them. Are their prospects looking better this season or worse? So the first is the Sixers. They're obviously going into this offseason, the idea was whether or not they were going to trade Ben Simmons or not. That didn't happen at the draft. It hasn't happened after. It may happen during the season. It's looking more and more like Ben Simmons is going to be a Sixer to start the season. After that, they made a few minor moves. They bring back Danny Green. They bring back Korkmaz on a deal. They sign Andre Drummond to now be the backup center for Embiid. I don't think that's a huge needle mover for me. That gives them some size. Drummond is a polarizing player. He's the numbers and sort of the minutes have dwindled over the years, probably for good reason. You can't look at the Sixers and think they solved any of their issues. They still have Simmons here, great player. We saw what happened in the playoffs with him. They still have Curry. They're still probably lacking a little bit of shooting. They don't have a traditional sort of on-ball point guard. I think they wanted to be in on Kyle Lowry. That didn't happen. And so they're kind of just the same, if maybe a slight step backwards, if you're worried about Simmons. I mean, and you think that there's, you know, real issues with his game overall. You're not worried about anything that the Sixers did at all. So I think from that standpoint, good team. Embiid's still a problem. They didn't make any drastic improvements around him at all. And so we're going to get a team that looks very similar to last year, which got exited by the Hawks in horrific style if you're a Sixer fan. So I think if you're the Nets, you'd look at the Sixers and say, okay, we kind of know what we have there. Not too much to worry about. Then you get down to Milwaukee. I'm just, like I said, I'm going through how the Eastern Conference just ended up standings wise. Obviously, Milwaukee coming off the championship, nothing new there. They're bringing back most of the same cast of characters. PJ Tucker actually is not coming back. Something of a blow considering how important he was from their defensive structure last season. They're going to need to replace him. Remember, they didn't have Dante DiVincenzo near the end of last year. They'll get him back from the injury. They re-signed Bobby Portis, but that's kind of it. If you look at their roster, they're going to be a good regular season team just because they have Giannis, they have good players. Their top three are good enough to have a really good regular season. If you're Milwaukee, you're really worried about the depth there, I think, now for sure. And so there's no meaningful improvement there. We know what it looked like when they were basically at full strength, and then the Nets took them to a Kevin Durant toe from going, you know, from being eliminated and probably having that team blown up. So you can't look at the Bucks and think, oh, there's any real, like, we know what they are too. So now we have two teams as constituted now. We just know what those two teams are, not really threats to what the Nets can do if their Nets are at full strength. Knicks made a lot of interesting moves. I have to think they're better. They're all a little bit, I don't want to say odd, but they're they're going for a, they want to be a good regular season team and probably want to at least make it to where they made it last year in terms of the playoffs, because they have a really, their team does look a lot different this year. So Kemba Walker is the big one. He gets bought out by OKC. He's coming over and is now going to be the Knicks point guard. The health issues you have to be worried about. The knee's been a constant problem for him, and it's unclear where his health sort of stands. I would say like an 80 to 90% Kemba Walker is still better than what they were dealing with on a starting point guard level last year, which was Elfrid Payton, who would play for like 2 minutes, and then Derrick Rose ended up starting through the playoffs. So let's just say Kemba Walker's healthy. That's a clear upgrade for them. They re-signed Julius Randle, so he's going to be there for a while. They also gave Evan Fournier a ton of money. Good defensive wing. We saw that the Nets had absolutely no problem with him in the playoffs when he was with the Celtics. So it makes the Knicks better, but not scary. They re-signed Rose to a very weird deal, considering how much money it is and how old he is. But whatever. Glad to see Derrick Rose get paid. I am glad the Nets did not sign that Derrick Rose to that kind of contract. But that's just the way it is. And they bring back some of the same other guys like Noel Burks and Taj Gibson. I think you have to call the Knicks improved, because they just they did add some like NBA ready dudes and definitely veteran guys. It's not a scary deep run playoff team by any means, even if they're all healthy. But if you're a Knicks fan, I think you're encouraged at least that, hey, maybe they didn't keep their powder as dry for other free agents to come around the corner, but they're going to probably be an exciting-ish regular season team again. And we saw with Tibbs last year that they punched above their weight anyway. So we'll call them better, not a threat. Then you get to the Hawks. Hawks are pretty much stand pat. They re-sign Collins, bring back Lou Will. They signed Gorgui Dieng to kind of stem some of the Okongwu minutes because he got hurt and he's going to miss the, at least part of the season with an injury. We saw what the Hawks were. They're a super feisty team. If you think that you're going to get a full season out of DeAndre Hunter this time, you think Cam Reddish took that step forward, which it sure looked like he did. Trey played like every bit of a, you know, big scoring superstar, at least in the playoffs. Good team, not a championship level team. If you want to project growth on their young guys, which I think is fair to do, they're probably stand to be a little bit better. They're pretty deep, especially in terms of their wings. So you have to figure regular season for them. Looks pretty good. The big one is next is the Heat. I'm going to get to the Heat there, and only because of where they finished in the Eastern Conference did it take me this long to get to what the Miami Heat did. Going to talk about them in a second. First, have to talk to you about our friends over at Built Bar, the very best protein bar on the market. This one's an easy one. When you get the Built Bar shipment coming into the house, oh, you know, everyone's going running for it. Covered in chocolate, so many great flavors, raspberry, double chocolate, strawberry. Maybe you want to go a little more ice cream style, cookies and cream, German chocolate, protein bar. That's the very best tasting bar on the market because it's not like those other protein bars that can sometimes taste like a weird spongy cardboard that you're sort of just powering down because you need to get something in you, not Built Bar. You're going to be reaching for these things when you're hungry, when you need a little bit of a boost, and you know the stats are going to back it up as well. 17 to 18 grams of protein, only 4 to 5 grams of sugar, calories ranging from 130 to 180, only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. If you want to get in on it now, they have the Grasshopper Cookie. That's if you're a Thin Mint fan. You're going to want to jump on that one. Built Bar is the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team. Go to built.com, use the promo code Locked On. You're going to get 15% off your order. Use the promo code Locked On for 15% off at built.com. All right, obviously the Heat were the big winners here in free agency. For the Eastern Conference especially, they made a ton of moves. They are clearly better. Whether they are on the level of the Nets is not, they're not there, but they're a much better team than they are last year. So the big move they initially made was reported well before the free agency deadline even started. That was Kyle Lowry was going to come over in a sign and trade deal from Toronto. A bunch of teams had opened up cap space on their books to try to get Lowry. A bunch of teams missed out on him and probably made some borderline egregious errors when it came to the moves they made to see if they could get him. It didn't happen. Miami signed him and adds basically exactly what they needed for their team, which is veteran point guard, game manager, super tough, awesome on defense, leader, was going to fit right into what the Heat are doing down there. And they have a pretty formidable starting lineup because they also re-signed Duncan Robinson and they bring in PJ Tucker as well. Tucker might not end up starting with this team depending on it. But now you're looking, as a Heat team, you're looking at a Lowry, Butler, Duncan Robinson, Bam Adebayo, and I guess we can throw PJ Tucker in there as well. They still have Tyler Hero coming off the bench. They're going to bring back Oladipo, who's going to, I think, sign for like something like a minimum and then become an unrestricted free agent next year. So looking to play his way back into shape. They also added like Markieff Morris, Dwayne Dedman. They made a lot of moves. This is a very good team. This is a team that will even with some injury, you have to project them better than the 40-32 win percentage, the 556 winning percentage that they had last year. Lowry is a huge improvement on the Kendrick Nunn, Goran Dragic minutes they were getting at point guard last year. So this is a very much improved team. Is it a championship team? I mean, we saw the Heat with a lesser squad go to the finals the year before in the bubble against the Lakers. They sort of played out of their head at that point, and it was much deserved. It did feel like they had everything sort of go correctly for them, slash they just sort of peaked right at the right time. This team, as it's constructed right now, is better than that team. So you have to, like, if you're a Miami Heat fan, you have to be pretty excited about what you saw here. I don't think it's something that I'm worried about from a Nets perspective. I think they probably have some pieces to the puzzle here that are problematic for what the Nets have put together. Right now, the Heat are 10th best odds, according to Bet Online, to win the championship at plus 2,000. So, you know, looks like the betting markets liked what they did. Don't love it. If just as comparison, they're in there jammed in between the Denver Nuggets and Dallas Mavericks in terms of overall championship odds. So while the Lowry piece is a nice splash, they bring back some of the key components that they need for their team, does it make them a championship level team? I'm betting markets would say no. And I think they're going to be a very, very good regular season team. I think they will give teams real problems in the playoffs. They're probably still missing, you know, I don't know, another Hero needs to probably make another jump up. He took a pretty decent step back last season. Again, it was a weird season. There was injury stuff, COVID stuff on Miami. So it's hard to look last year and say that's what the true Heat are, because again, we saw them the season before in the finals and, you know, played the Lakers really, really tough. So all in all, this is a team that has to be bumped up, at least in terms of what they did in free agency. And you know, if you're a Heat fan, you like it. I still think if you're a Nets fan, you're not too worried about it. After that, Celtics didn't do anything. I think they signed Enes Kanter. I think that was the only move that they made. This is a team, and they lost Evan Fournier. And this is a team that, well, excuse me, they lost Evan Fournier and Kemba Walker. And this is a team that I know Tatum kind of put him on his shoulders and carried them to a win over the Nets in the playoffs for the one game. This is a massive step back for this team. If you're a Celtics fan, this is kind of bad. I'm not going to say they're not a playoff team. They still are. Tatum and Brown together are that good. So in terms of just overall top two talent, those two guys are really, really good. But this is not a team that improved at all. So I hate to laugh about it, but this is sometimes you get worried about the Celtics. You know, they're a good organization. They have a clear superstar in Tatum, but the pieces around him are a bunch of big-time question marks at this point. And then you kind of just get to the rest of the East here. Wizards, they brought in, their team's going to look very different. No Russ. Now they have Dinwiddie. They're going to play Kuzma. They're going to play Harrell. They hope to see some gains out of Roy and Denny Avdija. After that, this is probably a borderline play-in team, and that's just kind of it. Pacers are going to come back. They'll probably be a little bit better. They'll get TJ Warren back this season. They lost Doug McDermott. You know, you want to say they get a coaching upgrade in Rick Carlisle. I can hear that one. But overall, none of the moves that they made have you really worried at all about their prospects. Hornets continue to kind of be a Hornetsy team here. They lose Devontae Graham. Maybe they get some growth out of LaMelo. And I don't know. It's the Hornets, whatever. Now, I'm going to skip a couple of teams here. Oh, no, excuse me. The next team just is the Bulls. So the Bulls are the other interesting one. Because believe me, we're going to go through the last four teams really fast. But the Bulls are interesting here, too, because sort of like Miami, they made a lot of moves that you have to look at them and say they're going to be better. Not scary, but better. So they signed Lonzo. Really like that move for them. pairing him against next to LaVine as a good defensive transition point guard who can shoot threes but doesn't need the ball in his hands all the time. Half-court offense stuff is not the best for him, but super athletic. Love the deal, bringing Alonzo there. They also brought in DeMar DeRozan, who probably will start for them. This team is going to be terrible on defense, but they'll probably end up starting him maybe like even at the four with Vooch at center. So I could kind of see that happening. We'll see what it ends up shaking out. You have to put him in the starting lineup, you would think. Again, their defense is going to be really compromised. This team could put up a lot of points on offense this season, though, because they still have LaVine. They did bring in Alex Caruso as a defensive guard. He's got a decent amount of run with the Lakers. We kind of know what he's capable of. Like I said, his big gift here is the defense, so you want to hope that he improves some of that perimeter defense. They end up trading Tice, and that's kind of what they did. This is an interesting team in that, if you're a Chicago fan, you at least probably feel good about your chances of making the playoffs this season and then probably losing in the first round. Not a scary team by any means. Will probably be a very exciting team to watch. I kind of like the moves in the sense that they're just trying to be better and make the playoffs. And, you know, are they back to being the Jordan era Bulls? Obviously, or even the Derrick Rose era Bulls? Obviously not. But they're trying to be better. They're trying to put a more competitive product out on the court. I think they end up doing that, but not in a way that you're really, really scared of. And then the last four teams out here are just the team. The Raptors are probably headed for the tank. Obviously, like, Lowry is gone. They still have Siakam and OG and Fred VanVleet. Maybe they're not headed for the tank. They'll be a decent regular season team, but they're not a better team. So you're not really worried about them. Cavs, we'll see how the draft picks work out. Our boy Jared Allen gets a big contract there. They're still not going to be very good. Magic are in full rebuild. Pistons are in full rebuild. So this is the Eastern Conference. I think from a bird's eye view, you have to look at the Eastern Conference and say, not only are the Nets easily the favorites here, obviously we already went through the betting odds, but did anyone like really make themselves so much better in the East? Is it going to be an easy walk for the Nets to the championship again if this is kind of how things stay? I think it's kind of shaping up to be that way. No one really improved. The Nets are going to improve, you would think, just by being healthy. Like, that's their improvement, is just keep everyone healthy this season, and that's the big improvement. And you're just not really worried about any team in the East. Maybe a little bit about what some of these teams in the West did. Lakers clearly better. Suns are going to bring back the team that they had. I'm not going to go through all these teams, but like, even all these other teams, like, your Clippers are going to be without Kawhi for probably most of the season. Blazers did nothing. Warriors are going to come back, I guess, healthier with Clay. And they just, now they still kind of have a bunch of projects that they're working with Kuminga and Wiseman. So, you have to look at the end of this free agency, not only look at what the Nets did, which we loved all their moves, and you have to look at what the other teams did and say, are we really worried about anything any of these other teams in the NBA did? And I think the answer is no. I think the answer is there's a couple teams that made moderate improvements. There's a couple that did some interesting things that maybe little question marks. We'll see how it works out. But in the end, no one, you know, retooled to the point where they are really big threats to the Nets except for the Lakers. And that really has more to do with just the big two guys being healthy as well. And we'll see how the Russell Westbrook thing works out. So overall, a total win for the Nets in free agency. A win when you look at the league as a whole for what, comparatively for what the Nets are going to do. Really like what we're headed into next season. We'll be back next week breaking down the rest of the draft, which we kind of got a little short shrift on the draft just because free agency basically started right away. We're going to go back and look at the guys the Nets got, talk to some people that saw some of these players during the season, during their college seasons, to give us a better view of what we can expect for when these guys get into Nets uniforms. So really excited about the post-draft stuff we're going to do. Any more free agent stuff comes along the way, we'll obviously have it for you. Like and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. Just hit that rate and review as well. Type us a little review. The numbers really picked up here through free agency. You can tell people are just chomping at the bit to keep talking Nets. We're going to be here every day for you. Like and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll be back again next week talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.